welcome to the fourth episode of Season 4 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 12th of April 2011, and in this episode we're going to have the latest instalment of the great Ubuntu UK podcast quiz and interview Chris Gutteridge about open data. We will of course have the latest news, events, bit about Ubuntu, and go over your feedback. I'm Mark, and with me this week, the A-team are back together. We have Tony, hey. Laura, hey. And Alan.
The A-team, who's B.A. Baracus?
I ain't getting on no plane, fool.
So, Tony, what have you been doing this week?
Not very much, but I have a surprise for you all.
Ooh.
Yeah, so if you bear with me 2 seconds.
Uh-oh.
Indeed, he goes into his magic bag of glory.
His bulging sack.
And,
Ooh. Ooh. Ooh, what's Ooh. This?
What you,
it's a parcel from the Transvaal.
It is. Here we go. One for Alan.
Ooh.
What are these? Ooh. This works really well on podcast audio. Oh, hello, it's a T-shirt.
It's another one for Alan.
It's a polo shirt.
Oh, hello.
It's another one for
That's
Alan.
That's very nice. We've
here's
got
one for Mark.
It's got our logo for on it.
For the benefit of the tape.
Here's one for Laura.
We've just received our lovely new branded Ubuntu UK podcast polo shirts.
Yeah, they look very swish, I have to say.
Yeah.
They've got a nice...
Mine's very small again.
That's all right. You're
mostly
quite...
mine's quite large.
You're very small. But yeah, so we've got these ready for when we do events and stuff with our new logo for our new branding for our new season. And they're pretty swanky looking, I suppose.
Yeah, they are really nice, aren't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. So that's what I've been doing. I've been sorting all those out for you.
Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Happy birthday.
Thank you. I've got clean clothes now.
Laura, how about you?
I was installing Windows XP.
Oh, that sounds like
hello.
Are we on the wrong show?
Yeah. On VirtualBox, yeah, which I've not used before. I've used VMware before. Mm-hmm.
So how did you find it?
Pretty impressed. It worked.
What, by XP or by VirtualBox?
VirtualBox. XP is doing all right so far. It's so I can install statistics package for university. Because I tried PSPP. Which, mm-hmm. And it only does really, really basic stuff.
Which is the Linux equivalent of the SPSS, which is the Windows package you're trying to use.
But I'm trying to get a license for the other on Linux, but it's not ready yet.
Oh.
Mm. So Windows XP it is for now.
Hooray.
Cool.
Mm. Alan, how about you?
Hello. I've been doing more testing on Natty. A bit scary. Doesn't feel anywhere near ready yet, but then I'm sure they'll knock it into shape by the time we release in about 2 weeks. Yeah, and I got really annoyed with all the screencasting tools. I've been trying to do some videos, and basically every screencasting tool on Ubuntu seems broken every time we put a new release out. So that's just been annoying me. And I made a little Minecraft server because the kids are on holiday. So I bought a copy of Minecraft for my kids each. Oh. And we all play on a little home server. It's very cute.
So when you say the kids are on holiday, are you trying to convince them that they are on holiday because they're building a desert island in Minecraft? And they're having a nice time.
Yeah, I've got them down the pit mining for diamonds on their holidays.
And you're building a castle.
Yeah, I am.
Are you sure
I have.
This is fun, Daddy?
They love it. They really love it. They really love it.
Excellent.
And Mark, how about you? What have you been up to?
Well, I wasn't here on the last show because I was in Oxford at Open Source Junction.
Ooh.
Discussing mobile open development and stuff.
How was that?
It was very good. Very nice setting. Lots of interesting talks, interesting people, good beer.
Did you talk?
I didn't talk. I listened and digested. And
there was a good lunch, was there?
Oh, there was a very good lunch. Yes. And I've also been using Windows 7 for the first time.
Hello, ooh. What? Again, are we on the wrong show? Is it just Alan and I that's keeping the Ubuntu? Is it just me that's keeping it?
This, again, was for work because I needed some tools and I did have an XP virtual machine on VirtualBox going, but it died a horrible death after me messing with it too much.
Right.
So I decided that I'd try Windows 7 out and it's, yeah.
It's, yeah.
It's got some quite nice touches to the interface, but...
What, like Unity?
But
you'd be surprised. Well,
no,
there
I
are
mean,
some very
one thing that was really I thought was quite nice is where it's got the not a dock taskbar with big icons thing at the bottom. Say in Internet Explorer, when it downloads something, it puts the progress bar in the icon, so that even if you're using other stuff, you can still see it. So that's quite nice.
Yeah, Ubuntu does that now too.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
Does it do a thing where you drag the window to the top and it maximizes?
Yeah.
As well?
And when you drag it to the left and the right, yeah. It maximizes left and right. I think they call that grid. Yeah.
I see. Not snap. Definitely
no, we
not.
Call,
snap.
No, we call that grid. Compy's grid. Yes.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, other than that, it's Windows. It's still a bit clunky and doesn't feel like it's got a lot to offer me.
Yeah. And it steals your freedom.
Fair enough. On that note, I think that probably wraps out the intro. And yes. We better get on with our first segment.
Thank you. And here we are again for the Ubuntu UK quiz.
Ooh. Uh-oh.
We once again have the 3D plasma display fired up in front of us.
Whoa, so, it's very bright today.
It is, yeah. So remember to put on your 3D glasses now.
Thank you.
Okay. Oh. That don't work on
and
the radio.
This week we're playing Ubuntu UK Fortunes.
Or Family Fortunes, as some people might know it.
Yes. No, no. Well,
legally different.
For copyright reasons.
I believe our American listeners know it's Family Feud.
Or yes. Ubuntu UK Feud.
Yes, indeed.
Oh, we've had a few of them.
So, before the show, we did a survey of 100 people to ask them various questions about Ubuntu and open source and about general knowledge.
I can't believe you actually did that.
I actually did that. So, thank you to everyone who answered. So, the way the game will work, on our 3D plasma display, you'll see the top answers hidden from view of each of the categories which we'll be asking you. And you have to try and guess what the top four answers for each category were. You have two lives in each round. If you lose those lives, then somebody else can steal your points. So you better get it right.
Makes total sense.
I understand perfectly what's going on.
Yeah.
You've never seen Family Fortunes, have you, Tony?
No, I don't watch ITV. Commercial television.
Right. So to start with, we need to decide who's going first. So the first round is a buzz-in round where you have to get the top answer to the first question. And the question is, if you're ready, fingers on the buzzers, we asked 100 people to name a member of Severed Fifth.
Alan.
That was Alan.
Buzzer was.
the internet, John O'Bacon.
We asked 100 people to name a member of Severed Fifth. You said John O'Bacon.
Yeah.
Our survey said...
Yay!
That was the top answer.
Oh, funnily enough.
That's a positive noise. That was a positive noise.
That was the yes noise. Right. So the first round passes to you. No. So you have two lives. So you can get
happy now.
One answer wrong, and on the second one, you lose control. So...
Why did I say my name?
I couldn't remember my name.
So do I have to get more members of Severed Fifth?
No, sorry. We're moving on to the next question.
Oh, thank you. I'm so glad about that.
So the round one.
Yes.
Okay.
Alan.
Yes.
We asked 100 people to name an Ubuntu distribution.
What? An Ubuntu distribution?
A release of Ubuntu. Sorry, I phrased that badly.
A release of Ubuntu.
A release of Ubuntu. We're talking about the code names, not the numbers.
Hoary Hedgehog.
You said Hoary Hedgehog.
Yeah.
Our survey said...
What?
Oh. I'm sorry, it was not one of the top answers. Oh, so you have one life remaining.
Oh, Alan, one
do I have
life.
To give it... Is this the same question again?
Same question again.
Okay. Maverick Meerkat.
You said Maverick Meerkat. Our survey said...
Yay!
So that's 11 points to Alan.
Oh, man. Pressure.
11 points?
Yeah.
Is that because 11 people said...
Because 11 people gave that answer.
Out of 100?
Out of 100, yes. Okay, you have, remember, one life remaining, three more to get.
Okay. Lucid Lynx.
Lucid Lynx. Our survey said...
Our survey created the sound.
Whew. So that was 14 points.
Mm.
Two more to get.
Natty Narwhal.
Natty Narwhal.
Really? I'd be so surprised.
Our survey said it was the top answer with 17 points.
Wow.
Wow. It's almost like we asked Ubuntu fans what they were.
Yeah.
Okay, you've got one more to get and one life remaining.
LMN. Oh,
I'm going to have to hurry you.
JK. Comet Koala.
You said Comet Koala. Our survey said.
No!
Oh, I'm afraid that was your last life, which means somebody else can, if they can buzz in and guess the remaining answer, they can steal your points.
Can you remind us what the right ones were? That we've had so far?
The ones we've had so far were Natty Narwhal, Lucid Lynx, and Maverick Meerkat.
You should see that on the 3D display board if you look up.
Are your 3D glasses not working, Tony?
I think they're a bit wonky. Maybe it's my eyes.
Can I buzz? Can I buzz?
Gone,
yes.
Laura.
Laura buzzed in.
Breezy Badger.
You said Breezy Badger. Our survey said...
Tense. does that mean Tony gets the points?
No, Tony can now guess, and if he doesn't get it, then you get the points you won so far.
Right. Intrepid.
Intrepid. Yeah. Intrepid. What? Anything
Intrepid
in
Ibex.
Intrepid Ibex. Our survey said...
God.
I'm afraid the remaining answer was Warty Warthog. In fact, no one gave the answer Intrepid Ibex.
Oh.
Which means that Alan is safe and escapes that round with 42 points.
Get in there.
Well done, Alan.
Right. So the next round, Tony has control. And we asked 100 people to name a piece of closed-sourced software.
Windows.
You say Windows. Yeah. Our survey says... I need to remember which button's yes and which button's no.
Hey!
That was the top answer with 23 points.
Get in. Have I got to... say something else.
Yes.
You've got to get five, haven't you?
You've got to get four.
Microsoft Word.
Microsoft Word. Microsoft. I'll take that answer as Microsoft Office.
Thank you, Mark.
Oh, what?
Because there was...
I've aggregated them. Microsoft OneNote.
The trouble is that takes out all my other answers. I was just going to go through the Office.
That was your guess, by the way.
Okay.
Which was worth 14 points.
Is that the second one?
Yes.
Okay, so I've got the top two. That's not bad.
Get you.
Right, another priority piece of software, Oracle.
Oracle. You say Oracle. Our survey says...
Ooh.
I love he's following the script as well.
It's like our own little Les
You
Dennis.
Have one life left.
Fern and Kerr these days.
Yeah,
you have one life left and two answers to get.
Okay. And it's a proprietary piece of software. And I'm going to say Internet Explorer.
Internet Explorer. Yep. No, ooh. I'm afraid that was your last life.
My last life. I have no life.
So... yes, another player can buzz in, Laura, to steal your points. Laura?
Adobe Acrobat.
Adobe Acrobat.
Ooh.
I'm afraid it wasn't up there.
Oh.
Alan?
A piece of proprietary software. And we've already had Windows, Office.
Oracle, Acrobat, and something else. Internet Explorer.
OS X.
Our survey said...
No!
I'm afraid not. So Tony... keeps the points in that round.
Yay.
With 37 points.
Woohoo!
You're too enjoying this.
The two remaining answers were Flash. Skype and Flash.
Flash, that's
of course.
Yeah. You just kind of think because it runs on Linux, it must be all right.
I don't think that at all.
Laura.
Yes.
Control passes to you now.
Oh.
We asked 100 people to name a programming language.
Oh, good.
Yeah, you lucked out with this one, didn't you?
So, I start now?
Yes.
PHP.
PHP. It's a programming language, but is it up there?
No! No.
I'm afraid not.
Java.
So, your first life's gone. Java.
Oh. No! That's mean.
Tony.
Tony buzzes in.
C. I'm waiting.
Yay! Right. So Tony steals that round with 12 points.
Oh.
Sorry, Laura. Better not next time. You will come around again, I'm sure.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks when it's your turn to do a quiz.
Okay, Alan.
Okay.
Round four, and control is with you. We asked 100 people to name a brand of canned soft drink.
I know what you want to say, but should you say it?
I want to say no. Oh, now I want to say all of those. I want to say Slurm, but I'm going to say Coke.
Coke?
Yeah.
You said Coke. Our survey says...
Yay!
That was the top answer with 37 points.
Wow. I need to keep those points. Right, so I need to get another one. Pepsi.
Pepsi?
Yeah.
Our survey says...
What?
Nope, I'm afraid Pepsi was not in the top four answers.
Andy Smith clearly.
Oh! I can't read. Sorry.
Hey!
Les Dennis sorry. Never does that.
Yeah.
That bribe worked.
Sorry, that was 10 points.
Slid a £5 note across the exactly. table.
Across the studio.
Across the studio.
So that's two of the top four, and you've got two lives left.
Ubuntu Cola.
Our survey says, if I can type...
Survey says, hit the key. Oh, there we go.
Yes. Yeah. Excellent. Thank you, nerds.
You have one remaining and two lives left.
Soft drink. I'm going to say slurm.
You said slurm. If it's up there, I'll give you the money myself. Oh. I'm afraid that was not one of the top four answers.
Oh, no.
Okay, you have one life left to guess the remaining top answer.
And no looking at the IRC.
I'm talking to them because I've got no chance. They're commiserating with me.
Oh.
What was the question?
It's Alan's turn to guess another soft drink.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Oh, is it?
You've still got a life.
Oh, golly. Oh, I thought I'd lost.
I thought people were waiting for me.
Oh, okay. Sprite.
You said Sprite.
Yep.
Press the right button. I'm afraid Sprite was not in the top four answers.
Tony.
Tony buzzes in to steal.
Can I go Mountain Dew?
Mountain Dew.
Unlucky.
Which means Laura, the controls with you.
Don't take any answers from the IRC channel.
Yeah.
Unless it's the right one.
Lilt.
Lilt.
That was so on the IRC.
No, I'm afraid. The remaining top answer was Dr. Pepper.
Oh, that's so misunderstood.
So Alan keeps the points in that round. With
hey!
59.
Oh, that's winner. Quite a high score.
Winner, chicken dinner.
Yeah.
Oh, well. So, Tony.
Yes, my second go.
Yes, your second go. And we asked 100 people to name an application that comes on the Ubuntu CD.
Open Office.
You said Open Office. Our survey said...
Sorry.
Does that include LibreOffice, or is that legally different?
Neither of them are in the top four.
Firefox.
You said Firefox. Our survey said that was the top answer with 18 points.
Wow. Ooh. Okay, so quite a wide spread of answers there on that one. Right, applications that come with Ubuntu on the CD. I know what is not on there, because we've talked about that for far too many years. Okay, what else we got? Let's go with Gedit. Well, don't laugh. It's fine. It's on there. Yeah.
Yes.
Excellent.
That was worth 10 points.
Stuart Langridge has clearly been answering questions here.
Yeah, right. So we have Firefox, we have Gedit. What else is going to come on the CD? I'm thinking of... What's the... I can't really say, can I? Because then you'll know what the answer is.
It's you that needs to know what the answer is.
I don't. Yeah, it is, isn't it? Really, it is.
Seriously, do you even actually use Ubuntu?
Yeah, but I install other packages on top of it. I only use the things that are there by default.
And it's got to be ones they've guessed.
Nautilus.
I thought you were going to say Norton then.
Oh, Nautilus. No, sorry, wrong button.
No, I think legally I have to take your first answer.
Judge rules. There we go. That was the sound I was going for.
What a shame.
So is that my second fail,
Yes.
Yeah, because I said Open Office.
You said Open Office.
It's far too honest.
Someone
else can buzz in to steal.
Alan. Rhythm Box.
You say Rhythm Box.
No, that's a good call.
Our survey says... So, Laura, it's with you.
Tomboy.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I'm afraid...
Linux kernel.
I'm afraid the remaining answers, don't forget this is what people said was on the Ubuntu
CD,
Shotwell and the GIMP.
Shotwell is.
Yeah. GIMP, less
see,
so.
See, the IRC channel said Shotwell, but I didn't cheat.
Yeah, you should have cheated.
You clearly, read the wrong one.
So Tony keeps the points in that round with 28.
Cool, okay.
And Laura, the final round of this week's Ubuntu UK points. Quiz. You're currently on 0 points, so all to play for.
She can't steal my points.
We asked 100 people to name a price comparison website.
What? Uswitch.
Oh.
You said uswitch.com. Our survey said...
Of course.
It's not in the top four, I'm afraid.
Go compare.
You say go compare.
Without singing it.
That's got to be in there.
Our survey says that was
the
top answer with 20 points.
Yay.
Okay.
Good. Well done. Another one?
Run out of steam now. The red one.
The red one. Am I to take that as your answer?
No.
See, this is a byproduct of having Myth TV and skipping adverts.
Yeah, I don't see any.
Dead air is a crime.
I'm afraid I'm going to have to hurry you.
Yeah, go on. No idea.
The guesses.
Oh, no, I'm guess. Afraid. Alan buzzes in.
Moneysupermarket.com.
What? That was not one of the top four answers.
Compare
the market. That was the second answer with 17 points. So you steal the points in that round.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Giving you 37 points from that round.
So I lost my points.
Yeah.
Unlucky Laura.
Failed to retain.
And that brings us to the end of this week's Ubuntu UK quiz.
Okay.
And it's just time to tot up the scores.
Okay.
And the winner this week, no, sorry, in reverse order is Laura.
Yay. Depends how you define winning.
With 0 points.
For some people, losing is a definition of winning.
Well, at least I didn't just get like 20 points and spoil my complete zero. I would have been disappointed then.
Alan is second.
What?
With 101 points.
Wow. Excellent.
And Tony wins with 114 points for the second quiz in a row.
I win last time?
You did win last time.
Excellent.
As I remember.
What did I get last time? I know I lost. But
no, I think we need to make an adjustment about what happened last time.
What happened last time?
Well, you said something
I won.
And I said it was wrong and it was right. So I'll adjust that. I can't remember.
Oh, okay.
Did Laura still lose and I still win?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. That's all that matters.
Excellent.
Excellent.
So what quiz are you going to do, Tony?
I don't know. Is it my turn next time?
Yeah.
I think
that's... That's just been decided.
Okay. Well, let's talk about that a little bit later, and then we can ask people to send in stuff towards the end of the show.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, we better get on with the news.
Now it's time for the news.
Okay.
Google has bid $900 million for the 6,000 patents in Nortel Communications portfolio. The patents are said to cover various mobile-related technologies and are likely to be used as a shield against Android-related patent litigation.
Oh,
good. more patent news. This is exactly what we wanted.
And... nobody's suing Google over Android anyway. They're all suing the handset manufacturers, aren't they?
Well, the story I was reading was saying that they were going to probably use it to help other companies who are being sued.
Because it's not good for Android.
So do cross-licensing agreements with HTC and other companies and then protect them. Okay. Yeah. Okay, it's all rubbish, but I guess it's ever so slightly less rubbish than all the other litigation.
Yeah, more patent wars is what we want. OSWatch, the UK-based open source advisory service, has published its biannual report into the use of open source in academia. The report shows a growth in usage of open source software, especially in universities.
Is that because they haven't got any money, so they spend they spend their money wisely on...
Well, over the past 2 years, universities have had quite a bit of money. It's only now they've... Had less.
They're putting all their fees up now, so they'll have even more money.
That'll
swing back the other way.
But I wonder if this is a change away from it being in the server room to being more on the desktop.
Actually,
apps.
The report does go through whether it's desktop applications and server applications and shows it in quite a bit of detail as well.
Because universities have always had a history of using open source in the server rooms because it's run by geeks. Like Chris Guttridge, who we're going to speak to in a minute.
Ian Watmore, COO of the UK Cabinet Office's Efficiency and Reform Group, gave evidence to the Public Administration Select Committee discussing government IT strategy, claiming that open source software is easy to hack.
Oh dear.
Yes. I mean, I read sort of through the report because, you know, I enjoy reading transcripts of evidence given to select committees. I mean, it's not... I don't want to demonise him. He didn't say, oh, open source is bad. He did suggest that government should use more Macs at one point, which I don't wholly agree with. But I just think this was a bit of a misguided comment because it's so broad and doesn't really mean anything.
Mm. And did he back it up with any evidence?
Not really, no. He said people at GCHQ can show you that it's easy to hack. I don't know what is
hack
in particular.
Into.
I
would imagine they would also show you it's easy to hack into Windows. Yeah. I mean, you know.
Yeah, or your mobile phone voicemail.
Or anything else. Topical.
Yes. Indeed.
GNOME 3, featuring the new GNOME Shell interface, has been released. Live CDs are available based on OpenSUSE and Fedora. A PPA is available to install the update from Ubuntu, while an Ubuntu GNOME Remix is also in the works.
Okay, so this is the alternative that isn't Unity that we're going to be using on Ubuntu.
Well, this is the official shell for GNOME. GNOME's own shell for GNOME.
Laid out quite a lot like Unity.
Yeah, I think there were some differences of opinion, and that's why, you know, Unity goes one way and GNOME 3 goes the other. There are some similarities, but...
There are quite a lot of differences. I had a play with the live CD as well.
Has it basically gone the same kind of way in that it's the full screen?
Full screen launcher, dock on the left.
Okay, so it's not vastly different.
No, but I mean, they've done some different things with the way they handle virtual desktops and notifications are very different. As well,
yeah, the virtual desktop thing is quite interesting. It reminds me of the way the iPhone and iPad do it. When you're rearranging your icons and you move an icon, you can move it off to a screen that doesn't exist yet.
Yes,
when it creates it.
Yeah,
when
GNOME
3
has one more virtual desktops than you're using at all times.
Yes.
Okay. Fair enough. Right, and that's the end of the news. And we've got some events to tell you about.
Ubuntu App Developer Week is underway this week. Join #Ubuntu-classroom to join in. I imagine that's on the Freenode network.
Yep. You would imagine right.
Ubuntu App Developer Week is a week of sessions aimed at enabling and inspiring developers to write applications that scratch their itches. The goal is to give all attendees a taste of the wide variety of tools on the Ubuntu platform that could be used to create awesome applications and showcase some applications that have been created and explain how they were put together.
Unfortunately, you will have missed 2 days of it, if not getting
all
three.
Well, actually, no, because it's all logged. So you can go back in the archive. It's all archived on the wiki. And so you can go back and see all the transcripts of every single one and the past app developer weeks and open weeks and all that kind of stuff as well. We keep all of them online.
So should it be, is it for people who don't really know how to program?
No.
Right.
No, I think it's more for, well, I guess, but it's mostly for getting developers into the Ubuntu platform.
Right, okay, so they develop somewhere else and they want to get going with Ubuntu perhaps. Okay, and we've had this promo from the Southeast Linux Fest to play out.
The third annual Southeast Linux Fest is happening June 10th through 12th in Spartanburg, South Carolina. If you've been to SELF before, you know how awesome it is. If you've never been to SELF, you're missing out on one of the truly great things in life. Come to hear informative and entertaining talks from our many engaging speakers on topics from building a community to building a death ray. Come to socialize with your fellow geeks. Come to see a hillbilly deliver a highly technical talk while drunk off his... In addition to our normal scheduled events, we'll also have a number of affiliated events this year. We'll be having BSDA certification, LPI certification, training from Puppet Labs, Drupal Camp, and UbuCon, and a Build an Open Source Cloud Day. So come to the Southeast Linux Fest June 10th through 12th in Spartanburg, or regret it for the rest of your life. For more information, visit www.southeastlinuxfest.org.
I love that trailer.
That's great. That is probably one of the best accents we've had in a trailer.
It is. It's fantastic.
I'd love to know about the Armenian engaging speakers or whatever it is.
And another event that we're involved in, which is like the worst kept secret in Ubuntu.
I wonder why that could be.
Yeah, fancy that. OggCamp is coming back.
Yay!
We're getting together with the Linux Outlaws guys, Dan and Fab, and we're going to hold OggCamp on the 13th and 14th of August at Farnham Maltings in Surrey.
Yay!
Yes. Very nice place.
It's a very, very nice place.
It's lovely, isn't it?
It's right by a canal, and hopefully, being August, it'll be really hot and summery, and there's places outside where people can sit and chat and what have
you. It's in the centre of the town, so there's plenty to do if you want to go off at lunchtime or after the event and have a beer or whatever.
It's a rather quaint town as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a nice historic place and some nice old buildings and pubs. A few old little shops and pubs and restaurants and stuff. Yeah, it's a nice place.
Excellent. And the most important thing, or one of the most important things, is it's a free event. You haven't got to sign up and pay hundreds of pounds to come along. You can
just sign up.
You can just sign up. There's an Eventbrite page, which just lets us know how many people are planning on coming. So you can sign up on that for free. Let us know you're coming along, and we can send you updates very, very, very infrequently. We're not going to spam you about the event via email and keep up to speed with everything that's going on. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes. You can also find out what's going on via the main OggCamp website, OggCamp fabs.org, which Fab has done a great job of sprucing up with our new look for the new year.
And in 3D.
Yes. You get your goggles on. And we're also going to be adding some more details to the website about accommodation, local accommodation, and transport links, that kind of stuff, as we have it.
Yes, indeed. And you can follow OggCamp on Twitter and Identica as well and get even more information, just in case you haven't got enough already, until it's coming out of your ears. Follow us on those two locations. But we need you to help spread the word, really. So if you are even vaguely interested in coming along, or even if maybe you can't make it but would like to come along, please tell your loco or your lugs or your friends, family, or work colleagues.
People you meet in the street.
Yeah, anybody you think might be even interested to come along.
Random strangers, anyone.
To what is a fantastic event about free software, free culture, anybody who's interested in open thinking, collaborative, creativity, all that sort of stuff. If they're even interested in any of those things, give them the tip off to check out ogcamp.org and find out more, and they can come along. So watch the website for more information, and we'll have more information in over coming shows about people who are offering to speak and how it might work and crew and all that sort of stuff. But for now, get along to the Eventbrite page, book yourself a train ticket or a aeroplane flight if you need to, and say you're coming along to OggCamp.
Lovely.
Excellent. Right.
See you there.
Yeah, indeed.
Okay, we've got Chris Gutteridge from University of Southampton here, who has been working with publishing open data and the like from Southampton. So, Chris.
Hello.
Would you just like to start by telling us a bit about what it is that you're doing at Southampton?
Right. I have got asked about 5 months ago, a bit before Christmas, if we could actually set up, at fairly short notice, an open data service for the university that did all the things an open data service should probably be, whatever they are.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And I said yes on two conditions. And they were, one, that I needed kind of a letter of authority. I needed an important title that said that I was allowed to do it, so that I didn't have to fight lots of people on the data issues.
Yeah. Right.
And the other one was that I needed them not to be quite too fussy about exactly which data we made open, because I didn't actually know how which bits were going to be easy and which bits were going to be hard. So, we were going to try everything and do the bits that were easy.
As a non-developer and not really having looked at this, your introduction sounds almost deliberately vague. Can you give someone?
Because I was committed. I was committing to very important people.
What is it? What is this really all about?
Right, there's two agendas, really. One's a transparency agenda, which is really, really important after the whole birdhouse scandals, duckhouse scandals or whatever it was and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Mm. But it's actually not, it keeps people honest, but it's not that big a benefit on the day-to-day things. The other thing is an organisation contains an awful lot of data that isn't secret. It's not even confidential, it's just you tend not to publish it outside PDF documents or HTML pages. When you create a website, you drive it off a database. Usually all the information in that database is public, or at least a lot of it's public, because it's ending up in the website, but you don't publish the database, you just publish the HTML pages.
So what's the big advantage then of actually publishing the database?
It means that specifically, your own members can reuse the data without having to jump through any bureaucratic hoops.
Right, so they don't have to cuddle up to the guys in the server room to give them the password to the MySQL
exactly,
server.
Exactly, but only for, and also it means they can work with it without real worry, because they're they're already absolutely clear of that this data is all okay to publish in any way.
Right.
Yeah.
And is there some hopeful byproduct that people use this data in new and innovative ways that hadn't been envisaged by the people who created a static web page based on a database?
Absolutely. I mean, at the very simplest level, imagine it like raising the RSS feed to the nth power. So you know RSS feeds take a news site and allow you to do other things with it?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's taking that, but for every kind of information you possibly have.
Okay. Can you give us an example how right. a real person might, you know, envisage that in their day-to-day lives?
Real people can't program.
Well, how they might see the results of this fantastic right. endeavour. Well,
I mean, one of the most interesting things I've got is permission from the transport office at the council to republish the live bus times data from the council website, but in a machine-readable form.
Do machines use buses?
Not yet.
Okay.
We have no information on that. But, so what this means is that I publish a web address for every single bus stop in the city. There's 1,400 of them, amazingly.
Wow.
And that's across the entire range of Southampton buses. But each of those buses has has a web page, and there's an HTML page, but there's also a .json page and a .rdf page, which is another file format, where you can get the data about not just the bus stop, where it is on and where it is on the map, but what bus routes it serves and which buses are due now, according to the council's data, which is attached to the buses.
You don't happen to have access to the tracker on the bus itself, do you?
No, I've been told that maybe in 2 years' time.
Oh, wow.
I did ask. And they do have GPS trackers, but I've seen 1 day's worth of data from that a third-year project ran with, and it, a student intern summer project, and the GPSs aren't perfect, so occasionally you see a bus in the middle of a park.
That might not actually be incorrect.
Well, I was going to say, nice day out for a bus.
About it. Yeah. But the real danger with open data is often raw data requires interpretation, so you have to have a certain... making sure that you're not releasing stuff that will scare the hell out of people, you know, like saying there's a bus in the middle of a park.
Mm. Yeah.
But actually, it's probably just the GPS is averaging until it gets a new reading.
Right. And so that could be, that would manifest itself as maybe an application on a mobile device, like a phone or a tablet or something.
The students who did the original work in looking at getting some of this bus data, now they've got an iPhone app, which now uses RSight to pull the data down to find out the bus times. But there's also a postgraduate who's written Layar, the phone app?
Yeah.
He's just made a layer that shows you various amenities around the university, and if you look at a bus stop on it, it tells you when the next buses are due.
Excellent.
That's pretty cute.
That's cool.
Because it's all joined up.
So is there a risk of people copying and storing this data for themselves, and therefore there being a million different versions of out-of-date data floating around the web?
No, there's not a risk of that at all. It's going to happen, but I don't see that as a big risk on something where the University of Southampton is authoritative. So we're not actually authoritative for the bus stops, but we've got the resources to do this, and it's handy.
Right.
And in 3 years' time, I'm sure the council will be doing it, if councils have any money left anymore. but for something which we are the authoritative source, for example, a list of University of Southampton programmes of study, or, what do we call them? Programme themes is actually a degree that you can take. We call them a programme theme for some reason.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But we are the canonical list of R1s, and so you can find them anywhere on the web. But because the way we actually... create the data, we actually use unique strings to represent every concept, but those unique strings are a web address. And if you resolve that web address, it will redirect you to a document that tells you facts about that concept.
Right, okay. If I was a course at a university, or, I don't know, a building at a university, what information would you be able to find out about me?
Well, so, for example, he says, trying to do one off the top of his head, if you went to http://id.southampton.ac.uk/module/COMP1004,
you can be assured that everybody is now typing that.
Oh, it's an exclamation mark.
Programming principles.
I can't do tiny URLs off the top of my head. You actually get a really, really boring page. Because, so if you go, but that's There's no HTML in that page at all. It's a really bad example.
tells you what it's called.
That's the unique ID of that specific course at the university. And if you added to the end of that, /2010-2011, that would be the version of the course that runs in a given year. And the two things are different concepts, because one is the abstract concept of the course that runs every year.
Mm. Yeah.
I can... do you want me to put together a tweet some links or something to you?
Yeah, that'd be handy. Thank you.
Okay, I'm just going to... If I just... What's your hashtag?
UUPC.
Oh, yeah, at UUPC.
UUPC.
PC.
Okay, well, I'll tweet these with hash UUPC.
Excellent.
And then people can follow them without actually typing them all in.
Cool. That would be good.
So what... There's two different web addresses that look very similar. One is the one that's the string that we use as just a database identifier, which identifies the concept. Mm. And the other one's an HTML page, which tells you about the concept. One redirects to the other, but they're semantically distinct, because one's a document on the web and the other one's a course you can study at the university.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Right.
Now, the cool bit is, if you change the HTML to a different... a suffix, it tells you facts about that module that are used to generate the page.
Okay, so did you say JSON? So if we replace HTML with JSON, you can see... Is that not right?
Not in this case, because I haven't got JSON for this one, but I have... my favourite one is .nt.
Okay.
Which is a bit hard to read at first glance.
Right.
But if you've ever heard of RDF and you've ever looked at it on the web, you feel like the first time you ever looked at an HTML document went, oh my God, the angle brackets.
Yeah.
So what NT is exactly, it's N triples format. It's exactly the same data as an RDF XML document, except with no clever things to help you, which actually makes it much easier.
Right.
As usual, when you try and do something clever, it's actually easier if you do it the dumb way. And all this is sets of... The identifier of a concept, it's three columns. Column one is the identifier of a concept, the next one's the identifier of a relationship, and the last one is either a literal value, like a number or a string, or the identifier of another concept. So the first row in this says, let's pick a triple out of it. So it says, this module is in academic session, and then the ID of an academic session. And that just is a single fact with absolutely no... context whatsoever, because it doesn't need context. It's true in and of itself that module exists in this academic session.
Okay.
So I've gone from looking at a course to grabbing an RDF file, and from that RDF file, I've managed to get some lecture notes about loops, which is rather marvellous.
And what that's actually, what's interesting is you've pulled information from several sources here, because the EdShare service provides some data that says what lecture notes are available for modules, and the courses database at the university tells me the name of the module and how many credits it is. So I'm pulling information from multiple sources to generate this page to generate the data. And they can be refreshed separately, but everything gets boiled down into triples, which are the... have none of the structure of the information, but they're just individually true facts, and then you can put them back together in whatever order you want.
So would I be right in saying that it basically allows each individual person or department or area of responsibility to be responsible for their own data? They can update a course description, somebody else can update a building information, and it can all be aggregated and pulled together.
And we've got that in some cases. In other cases, we're taking it from a database where it's canonical. Right. But what we are doing is I'm sourcing data from several different groups to produce all the different points of interest and service around the university. So you've got the bike sheds and the location of the bike sheds and opening hours, if they have them, of car parks and bike sheds, is owned by the transport office, and they maintain that data. Whereas the times of the student hall receptions and the careers advice desk is owned by student services, and the coffee shops are owned by catering, and each of them are maintaining their own data, and I'm collating it and publishing it into triples.
Are you leading the way in this area, or are there other universities doing this, other organisations doing this around the UK?
I'm really really proud of what we've done, but what we've done is only really going to be valuable when other people pick up some of our techniques or work out better ones, and then we discover we've got early adopter syndrome and we have to backtrack and use someone who's come up with something later and better.
Right.
But so once, it's like an RSS feed. Putting out an RSS, if we were the only site in the world to be putting out an RSS feed, that's kind of cool. It's still useful, but it's not half as useful as when they become ubiquitous.
Yeah.
Mm. And there's a list of universities in the UK that I know of that are currently doing similar projects, and my poor friends are going to be suffering from all these baffling links in my...
Well, if you provide us any of those links, we'll put them in our show notes so other people can get hold of them as
right,
well.
Right, so what I'm doing is I'm just tweeting these with UUPC.
Cool.
And so...
So if you're listening live to the show, you can search for at UUPC and check out all these links. They should be right in the Twitter feed.
There. One thing I did quite like was it gave an overview map of the university, and I could zoom in and look at all the amenities and facilities
right, the amenities
and
maps,
stuff.
We've got two maps. If you go to under places and view map, there's a map that I produced, which is actually down. In fact, it's just maps.southampton.ac.uk now. I got the Commons Department went, oh, actually, that's pretty nice, isn't it? Yeah, sure. So I just registered it as maps at the university.
Excellent.
And I noticed that I can just, for example, if I'm desperate for my beverage of choice, I can just search for Coke and find all the machines that have got Coke in them.
What's nice. Important about the map you're looking at is I have no control over that map. That map is not run by the University of Southampton. That is run by a bunch of postgrads being enthusiastic.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's a good thing.
But they're using the open data,
right.
And they've actually also contributed back some open data to add the amenities that no one in the university was sure. So the few things like the statues and...
yes, I noticed that.
But what's been great is they've been really helpful about going and finding things that... If I'd asked one of the buildings and estates people to give me the latitude and longitude of all of their waste facilities, they'd have never run around with a GPS doing it for me. They just don't have the resources to do that.
But students have the time and energy and inclination to go and find all the bins,
yeah.
Do they?
And so they've gone off and done that. And then people have gone, we should be managing that. And so we've handed it over. So it's being maintained by the right people, but they've not had to do the legwork, which would have cost them probably thousands of pounds in paying people, some consultants, to do it.
Mm.
And they're responsible for keeping it up to date if it changes, and bike sheds don't move much.
That's fair.
This is why I focused on buildings and places as the initial thing, because they're not very controversial, and they're...
somewhat immobile.
Yes. Basically, it's a very bad day if a building moves.
So in general, did you come up against much resistance?
Yes, a little, from people who just... Not malicious resistance, but a little bit of just, oh, you have checked the legal issues.
Oh, right. Mm. So not people saying, we don't want you using our data, go away.
A few people... the buildings and estates were very cautious that we didn't have crowdsourced data overlaid with formal authoritative data.
Right.
For example, you didn't want... the formal name for a building to be muddled with an informal name a student happens to call it because they think it looks like something amusing.
Right. Or the nickname for the halls and so on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, that could easily be actually a very negative thing.
Yeah.
And it's led us to some quite interesting things about how we accept data in. Mm. And we're quite happy to have third-party sites augmenting our data and providing, because they can use our IDs, and you could have a student could, for example, decide to produce a reviews of things at Southampton and use our IDs and our data to create a review site that gives you names, information about things from us, and then adds reviews. And
really cool.
We might not want to directly associate with that because it might have things that weren't appropriate to come from the authoritative official source from the university, but still be of massive value to the members.
Yeah.
Cool. Right. I'm afraid that we're coming to the end of the segment, Chris, so we're going to have
That's
to leave it there
fine.
For now.
I should point out it does run on Ubuntu Linux.
We should have asked that earlier.
My technologies, I think, shout out to my libraries. We're using Forestore, which is open source RDF database produced by a company called Garlic. They make a commercial version that you can pay for, but this is the free version.
Nice.
We use things like curl and Wrapper, which is processing library, PHP, Arc2, and a couple of libraries we've written ourselves called Graphite and Grinder.
Brilliant.
Lovely.
Excellent. Well, thanks for being on the show, Chris.
It's been great talking to you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye-bye, guys.
And now it's time for a bit about Ubuntu.
Hey.
Gerald.
In your brains.
It's almost like you don't need to be here.
Oh. A bug has been filed against Unity. Fancy that. But this is specifically about the lack of support for on-screen keyboards, making it inaccessible. In the discussion, the thing that people picked up on is that Mark Shuttleworth mentioned that Classic GNOME will not be available as a fallback option in the Ocelot release.
He just dropped that in.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was dropped in as a comment like partway through. But, well, that's
it's all right for Natty, but it's not all right for Ocelot because.
Which will be 11.10, so the one that comes out in October.
Yeah, so I guess we'll have Unity 3D and the fallback will be Unity 2D in 11.10. And a lot of people have said, oh, no, look, this shows that they're throwing away GNOME, you know, completely. And I think I'm kind of not surprised. I kind of saw this coming. I don't know whether that's because I'm on the inside, but when you look at it the Ubuntu community.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I just kind of think this isn't really remotely surprising.
Yeah, to be fair, they would have the option of keeping GNOME 2, maintaining it themselves as a fallback, or doing switching to GNOME 3 as a fallback for Unity, wouldn't they?
Which would just be, I don't know, a bit strange and a bit messy to me.
Yeah, and in terms of the In terms of the accessibility problems that people have been saying, he's saying it's probably not going to be fixed for Natty, but it will be fixed by Ocelot. Therefore, it won't be a problem by then, and this is only a first release of this software. So.
And I'm kind of not surprised that it's not accessible either. It's a shame, it's disappointing, but given the thing is... You know, I don't think the word riddled is possibly, you know, a bit too harsh, but it has quite a few bugs. And, you know, it's quite under quite intense development, even now, quite late in the cycle.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised that accessibility is taking the back seat.
It's got, 2 weeks left before it ships?
There's something like that. Beta 2 is very soon.
Right, okay. Good luck, everybody.
Yules.
And in related news, a review of Natty has been published on the Register, and it was called The Worst Ubuntu Beta Ever.
Harsh.
Yeah, that's the headline. But when you actually start to read the review, it's it's couched in slightly softer terms, which he does say that it's the worst Ubuntu release ever.
But then he does also acknowledge that it's not the final Natty release even. It's a beta, and it's a beta of not an LTS release.
Yes.
We say that all the time, though. We do say, well, it's not the final release, and, you know, by the final release, it'll all be perfect, and, you know, it won't look like this. And
It's more that he can see there's actually a lot of good in Unity when he's reviewed it, and there are some nice changes and stuff. But he just hopes it's a fair few bugs, like a Banshee crashed repeatedly over and over again. He couldn't even get it to stay up long enough to take a screenshot,
oh dear.
Which is a fairly big fail. But yes, it's not a good start anyway, because the Register gets read by so many people.
Yeah.
And the Ship It project, which is the project that used to send out free CDs, free installation CDs for Ubuntu to users who couldn't download it, has shut down.
Oh,
and this is something that sort of goes from the dawn of Ubuntu almost with Ship It. You used to be able to order box loads of CDs.
I remember shipping a big box of Kubuntu CDs. Ordering a big box of Kubuntu CDs.
Did you have a table leg you needed to prop up at all?
I used to give them out to people.
Door to hold open.
Yeah.
Burn them to keep you warm as a student.
But it was a good scheme, I think, to build up public awareness of Ubuntu and get it into some places where perhaps there wasn't the bandwidth to download it. But I guess its time has come. It must have lost a huge amount of money over the years doing it that way.
Better broadband now.
Yeah.
And people can get distros on the cover of magazines now as well. Mm. You walk into Smith's and it's, you know, quicker as well. It is a bit of a shame.
A bit of a sad day, but, you know, its time had come, really, I suspect.
Yeah. Although locos can still get hold of... sets of CDs, and you can, of course, buy CDs in the store, which will help support Canonical. You know,
do that then.
Yes.
So the next point is about Project Harmony.
Yeah, and it's a blog post.
Struggling slightly because nobody could summarise it enough to actually.
The title of the blog post should explain it. understanding Project Harmony, and all of us have read that, and none of us do.
No. It's something to do with licensing and copyright contributions. Yes. So when you contribute to a project, you sign a copyright of your contribution over to somebody, and the legal frameworks in which you do that, and Canonical is trying to harmonise them, I guess, hence Project Harmony.
Yes.
And there's a very complex diagram which you can look at.
And none of us really got it.
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
If anybody does understand it, please send us an email or a voicemail or whatever and let us know.
Members of the community have spoken out against OMG Ubuntu's sexist marketing campaigns.
Mm. What have they been up to?
Well, there's one of the... I think someone on Twitter, and a Canonical person, Ubuntu contributor, noticed that there was an advert on Facebook. And it was a picture of a pretty woman and a piece of text ad copy next to it that said something like, you know, we can't help you get this sexy lady, but for all your Ubuntu news, go to OMG Ubuntu.
Right.
And apparently that was targeted at heterosexual men and homosexual women.
Yeah.
And there was a male version that was targeted at homosexual men and heterosexual women.
Okay.
So targeted adverts.
Yep.
Trying to draw people into OMG Ubuntu as a news site.
But using sex to sell it, really, in a way.
Yeah, and some people didn't like that, and
it just sounds.
I can see why.
Yeah, it just sounds a bit crass.
Yeah,
I don't know.
And the is it Benjamin
Humphreys? Benjamin Humphreys, the guy behind him and Joey, who run OMG Ubuntu. Yeah,
yeah. He posted a reply to the person saying, "Oh, look at this advert. I'm never going to read OMG Ubuntu now." And saying, "Oh, it's okay because we do it for women as well." So that makes it all right, as long as we're sexist against everyone equally.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure I follow that.
No. Isn't it supposed to be ironic?
Well,
it's supposed to be a parody of the dating adverts you get on Facebook. I'm not on Facebook, so I've never seen them. But I can appreciate what they probably look like.
I mean, dating adverts anyway, isn't
it? Yeah. But yeah. I don't know. It's a tricky one because I can see how it's a news site trying to get readers, and it's hard to do adverts that people will actually look at, let alone click on, especially on Facebook, where there's plenty of other things trying to get your eyeballs.
And apparently this works.
Well, yeah, and apparently it's a successful ad campaign.
We're talking about it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. It just doesn't strike me as incredibly clever.
No.
You know, like you're saying about the parody, it's not like you go, oh yeah, that's quite clever actually. It's just like,
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't necessarily have to be, advertising doesn't necessarily have to be clever though, for it to work on a certain demographic.
Yeah. And but if it's supposed to be a parody, it should be clever.
Well, if that's the rationale behind its existence, then surely you should recognise it as a parody and it shouldn't just look like a rubbish advert.
It doesn't strike me as a parody so much as just taking what they know works and making it work for them.
Yeah.
Is catching people's eye, and that's the difficult bit is getting that initial contact, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay, right.
And finally, EduUbuntu WebLive now supports all packages from the Ubuntu archive in NATI.
This is awesome.
It is really good. I tried it out, and it's like basically you go to a website, you say, I'd like to try out this package, and you get a VNC session into a NATI install running that piece of software.
Even better than that, it's embedded in the software center. So when you're looking in the software center at software packages and you think, oh, that looks interesting, but I really don't want to bother installing that, you know, on my system. There's a button you press that says try it, and you hit that button and a window appears after a little while and, sparks up a copy of that application that you haven't even got installed on a remote machine and you're connected remotely to it, and you can have a play with the application for a certain period of time, with certain limitations.
And he's now basically made it available so that any application that's in the archive, the Ubuntu archive, barring a few that he's blacklisted for various reasons.
You know, things which require 3D acceleration, things which won't happen over VNC.
But pretty much sort of 1,300 applications available to test online.
That's pretty awesome.
Without commitment, with even less commitment than there is to installing it locally.
And I think the guy who did this, Stefan, has actually just started work at Canonical.
Oh, right. Oh.
Yeah, partly, I'm sure, as a result of the extensive work he does in the testing team and in EduUbuntu, and indeed this as well.
Cool.
So well done, Stefan.
Good luck to him. Laura?
We've had a bit about Ubuntu, and now the next bit's not about Ubuntu.
Okay.
So Linus Torvalds has weighed in on a discussion about problems with audio playback in Flash under Fedora.
Yeah.
quite determined.
In quite characteristic, yeah. Typical annoyed Linus style.
It's one of those celebrity bug reports. It's not one of ours. So, yeah, it's on. It's a bug on Red Hat's Bugzilla.
Mm.
If you want to look it up, it's 638477. It's very long and drawn out.
Basically, there was a problem with the sound on Flash because Adobe have done something non-standard in Flash, and Fedora do it the right way, so it's not a bug in Fedora. Definitely not a bug that they can fix. Kind of like when Colonel Gaddafi said, "I can't step down because I'm not president."
And nice analogy.
Basically, Linus came in and said, "Users don't care whose bug it is. If you can fix it, you should fix it."
Which is a fair point.
Yeah. And there were loads of little fixes in that bug report. Well, not fixes, but workarounds. Very simple workarounds in order to work around this dodgy behavior. And then lots of intense discussion about how the memcopy and memmove
commands.
It was interesting, but man alive, you know.
It went from Linus Torvalds to the uber geek sort of saying what the users want down to the hardcore kind of kernel hacking thing going on there. But he was obviously really, really annoyed about it, or at least the discussion. And I can only assume he really wanted to watch the Rebecca Black Friday video.
Clearly.
He couldn't
get
the sound on it because
that's what it is.
That's the best part of that video.
Well, I listened to it. I thought the sound was skipping. Did I not? Oh.
Right. And that's all in the bit about and not about Ubuntu this time.
It's time for your feedback. And Elmer Perry emailed about our discussion on religious programs in Ubuntu to say,
"I understand some people can get up in arms about religious programs being available from Ubuntu's software center, but while there are a couple of programs for Bible study, there's also Seco for studying the Quran. I think it's very noble of Ubuntu to have both, where in other arenas you might get neither. Perhaps if one's religious text is not there, it's time to find a developer to create one. My point being this, rather than trying to do away with one or the other, why not just have more options for the different world's faiths? As a minister to children, I'm thankful there are open source options for study software, which keep me from taking it out of my budget. I use Ubuntu in both my office and in the classroom."
Absolutely. It's one of the freedoms of the GPL is to not restrict what you're doing with the software. And if someone wants to do it, use it for Bible study, and someone else wants to use it for creating nuclear weapons, so be it.
Good, bad, or indifferent.
Venn diagrams have a very small segment.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, as I say, it's the freedom for people to kind of sit down and create their own solutions if they want to. I guess there are probably just some areas that people haven't yet done that, but maybe they will.
We got various comments and emails about the Unity interface in the upcoming Natty release. Paul emailed,
"While there are some nice additions in the Unity interface, e.g. full screen launching, Mac style menu bar, it is the biggest, gaudiest, most obnoxious launcher I have ever seen on any platform. I realise that it's all the rage now to make desktops look like smartphones, but putting something that big and that ugly on my screen without letting me move or hide it just seems wrong. P.S. Laura CZ is great. Any chance of her becoming a regular host?"
Maybe.
That was almost kind of contrasting a little bit, the grumpiness of his first bit. P.S. Laura's great.
All the emphases were Paul's.
Yes,
indeed.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, he says something that big and ugly. Okay, well, that's, you know, perspective. But without letting me move or hide it, well, it auto-hides. And, yeah, okay, you can't move it. You know, Mark has dictated that it will be on the left-hand side of the screen.
Therefore, it will be on the left-hand side.
Oh, I'm sure someone will hack it so it'll go on the other side of the screen or down the bottom or wherever people want to put it. But for now, it's only on the left-hand side of the screen. He has some points.
Yeah.
Ian Harrington left us a voicemail with this question.
Hi, this is Ian from Paradise, Texas. And earlier, I was listening to an older, but not too much older, episode of this podcast. I believe it was Season 4, Episode 1. But anyway, I was listening to it, and a discussion or argument of free software being a winner of something by Laura's definition, and y'all forgot to mention that close to 80% of the web servers are ran by Linux. I mean, wouldn't that count as free open source software? All right, bye, and keep up the good work, and love the podcast.
Oh,
thank you, Ian. That's very kind of you to say.
See, I have a problem with that because people are using free software, open source software, but they don't know they are when it's just on a web server or a DNS server.
You want it to be in their face.
Yes.
All the time. Facebook, powered by Linux.
They're not going to notice. They're not going to care. Exactly. You know, loads of people use Facebook and it has got Linux and stuff on the back end, but people don't care. Because they don't know, and secondly, they don't have the opportunity to embrace the freedoms that are inherent in the.
People don't care if there's an ARM chip or a Freescale chip or a whoever chip in their phone. They don't give a monkey's what the firmware is in their telephone. No. They just want it to work.
Indeed. Okay. All right. You win.
I was agreeing with you.
Oh, right. Fair enough. Sorry.
In a backhanded way.
It's so hard to tell sometimes. Sorian left some quick and to-the-point comments about the Natty release on our website.
When I tried Natty, I found it really annoying that the default apps get the global menu and non-defaults don't. They said this from the start, but is there any news about fixing it? I use Mint, and I think the Mint launcher is just about the best there is. I wonder if Canonical has considered using it and what you guys think. And have you noticed how many people donate to the Mint project?
No, I haven't.
I had, actually. I had looked at it a little while ago because someone told me, you know, you do realize that's a community and loads of people contribute. And they have loads of stats about how they get their revenue.
Right.
And there's a significant number of people who just, you know, hit the button and pay them some money.
And they're just donating kind of small amounts, but it all adds up? Or
yeah, well, there's some significant, like some chunky donations as well, yeah.
Do they need a podcast?
They have one. Well. And you've talked to the guys who do it.
I know. It was great. I haven't played with the Mint launcher, though. I don't know if it's... I don't know.
It's a bit like the Windows 7 kind of like big slabby thing when you hit the button.
Okay.
You get a big... like appearing and some of your most recent stuff, a bit like KDE actually,
right?
Newer versions of KDE, I think.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm not sold on it myself. I quite like Unity.
Well, if you're a Mint user and you've tried it, then why don't you give us your feedback? Even send it into the addresses that we'll be covering at the end of the show.
Peter emailed to point out that
Unity uses the same keyboard shortcuts as Windows 7 to launch applications without requiring the mouse. In particular, the Windows key and the number launches or switches to the application, or the Windows key shift and the number launches a new instance of the application, or just the application if no other instance exists. Which is great when you have to use Windows 7 at work and want to switch back.
There's an awful lot of keyboard shortcuts in Unity.
Yeah, I read a report about saying that it's great you can do so much from the keyboard,
yeah.
Which is
it's like good, I guess. Doing certain combinations and using the numbers on the number keypad, you can throw a window to the top right corner or the bottom right corner, bottom left or top left, just by pressing a key and, you know, just to throw windows around the screen and move stuff around and get yourself, you know, the right thing visible on the screen at the time. And yeah, it is very good at very quickly being able to, if you've got the Unity launcher down the left-hand side with like the 10 most common applications you use listed, you just hold down the Windows key and press 1 and you get the first one, you hold down Windows and press 2 and you get the second one. It's really quite straightforward.
Yeah, cool.
But really hard to discover them, so you have to go and find the documentation.
Terry Gardner left a comment about terminology of Unity.
The Ubuntu BFB button in the top left opens the dash, not the lens. If you click the dash and select one of the top shortcuts, it opens the application lens at the required section. There are two lenses by default, application and file and folders, that are in the bottom of the launcher. Also, if you open the dash and then search for an application, it doesn't suggest apps to download. This feature only works in the application lens, not the dash.
Mm.
I have absolutely no idea what that says. I've read it about 3 times.
I'm confused.
Let's just leave that there.
Yeah, maybe not.
Well, thanks for taking the time to write in. Unfortunately, we're all confused.
No, I actually went through each of his steps and I was like, yeah, he's right. Yeah, that works exactly as he describes it. But it makes no sense without a picture, I think.
Yes.
Okay.
On a different topic, Albert emailed to say,
it would be great to hear about somebody who is using open source software to produce something, not just system administration and programming. Programming does produce something, I might add there. Project London looks amazing and is using Blender, and we'll put a link in the show notes.
Yeah, it does look amazing. There is a little clip up on the projectlondonmovie.com website, and it says, this movie will eat your planet. But it's another volunteer, community-generated, 3D-rendered movie thing.
Arguably, we took on board what Albert emailed in to say when we interviewed Chris Guttridge earlier on, who uses open source software to produce
something other than
amazing.
Yeah, a map of bins. And finally, we've got another message from our Wing Commander.
Good day to all you loco UK people. Wing Commander Sir Arthur Curmudgeon here on the M3P. 3 p.m.
That's time for my nap. No, got it. MP3. Anyway, after listening to your last podcrusting thingamajig, I was most confused. But then I frequently am confused these days. The old brain's not been the same since a bout of oxygen starvation up Kilimanjaro. We never did find the rest of that aeroplane. Where was I? Oh yes, confused. Now about this cheese or font game you mentioned. What happens if the blasted thing is a cheese and a font? Like, say, the American cheese font. Bah! Or Swiss, or Emmentaler. Cheese and font, you see. Sadly, it produces a nasty yellow mess in my laser printer, so I've stopped experimenting with edible documents. After a long pause in your program, when I thought I had actually expired, gave me a hell of a fright, I can tell you. One chap said, "Honestly, I do know what I'm doing. That's the spirit, lad. I find if you say it often enough, the rest of the chaps in the plane start to believe you. Comes in jolly handy just before a tricky landing. Or any landing, come to that. Nearly all of mine started that way. I really wanted to complain about your pointless discussion about swearing. Honestly, I've never heard such a load of in my entire life. I spent most of my flying hours with good RAF chaps in a Vulcan bomber. I heard some swearing then, I can tell you. Pretty much all the time, actually. In the end, I took it to be a sign of affection. Well, that's all for now. Yours, the WC.
That is absolutely brilliant. Tears of laughter flowing down the faces.
I will never put cheese in my printer again.
Yes, we do. Oh, like
it's so hard to get it in the toner cartridge.
Yes. Right. Okay. That's all of your feedback.
And on that note.
And that's all we've got time for. Thank you for listening, and thank you for tuning in, either listening live, downloading. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, which is podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including our voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds. It's really nice to get voicemails from people, so please do send stuff in. You can join
even if they are completely nutty. Like that guy.
They are absolutely over the something. Facebook, you can join us on Facebook and find out stuff there. Our IRC channel as well. So let us know what you think of the show, or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. You can send us an email, podcast@ubuntu-uk.org, and you can join us in 2 weeks on Tuesday the 26th of April for our next live episode. There we go, another
thanks
one in the can,
everyone.
Yeah, thanks for listening. We shall have to think of some interesting stuff for next time. We didn't talk about the quiz. Oh well, check out the Ubuntu UK podcast Twitter feed, and we'll give you some information about what we're going to do for the quiz next time.
What you're going to do
what I'm going to do for the quiz, apparently. Anyway, thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
Right, cheers. Bye-bye.
Yeah.